You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Detroit students have a constitutional right to a basic education. That was the decision handed down late last week in a federal appeals court, overturning several lower court decisions and taking some education watchers by surprise. The lawsuit was filed in 2016 by a group of former Detroit students. They accused the state of Michigan of failing to provide them with the resources needed to learn basic academic skills, including literacy, skills that are essential to participating in democracy. Now the so-called right to read suit will return to a court in Detroit unless the state decides to appeal or settle with the plaintiffs. We were looking for a practical read on what this all might mean for students in Detroit and beyond. So with us today is Matinga Ragatz. She's an education consultant and former Michigan Teacher of the Year. Hey, Matinga.
Hey, April. How you doing?
I'm all right. How do you think about what schools owe students and what kind of education we think of as a minimum standard?
Well, you know, April, we keep promising these kids that if they go to school and get through school, that will afford them upward mobility. That's the promise that we give to them. However, when you're required to do something and the state requires you to do something, but they don't keep their end, we know we got issues. And I think these kids are not dumb. They're just kids. And they understand fully the commitment that the state has, you know, to them.
Yeah. What do you think of when you think of what's enough? I mean, obviously, it is a tragedy whenever a kid gets through a school system and is not fully literate. But what do you think of as a truly adequate education?
Well, for me, the purpose of education for me is to develop these children into productive citizens, productive human beings. And so to me, the idea that the kids need basics, just physical safety. They need textbooks and materials and resources. They need teachers that know the materials and resources. And of course, they need their mental health in check and making sure that they're in a place that people care. And, you know, one of the things that is very important is that these kids go to different schools for sports, for school activities, and they see what other people have. So when they go back to their school, they completely and absolutely understand their value, or at least that's the value that society gives on them when they basically are in slum conditions.
I understand that you had a conversation with some teachers from Detroit this weekend. What was the reaction to this lawsuit?
Well, the worst part is, you know, they're asking for just basic literacy. Like, the kids need to learn to read and write, because that particular talent, or at least that particular ability, allows them to participate as citizens in our community and our government. So their biggest problem is that if the literacy rates are low, especially in the lower grades, it affects the implementation of the entire curriculum. So once you start in the third grade and you're reading at kindergarten level or at first grade level, it affects your entire career until the 12th grade.
I wonder if this resonates with them more as an acknowledgement of the many things that these teachers are trying to provide for kids and are trying to deal with, or did they see it as more of an indictment for what's not happening in their schools?
Well, it is, and I think both. They you know, the teachers that I spoke to felt like at least the issue is now in the public eye, and hopefully, if the state does not appeal this decision, it could affect the schools nationally. And Detroit schools are not the only schools in the nation that suffer from this, right?
Yeah.
But one of the things that one of the teachers said that was really interesting to me, she was talking about, you know, when you know, kids or people from vulnerable populations ask for a minimum, there's often this outpouring of, well, how are we going to pay for this? And of course, I read the dissenting judge's decision, and that was basically his outline decision. Like, how are we going to pay if literacy is a constitutional right? But it just seems to them that when, you know, entities with massive budgets, quote, need help, then there's nobody ever asks where that money comes from. And so, for one, they feel like they are seen, and finally, their plight might have a new decision. Or, in the second thing, is shame on the people who basically are complicit in the state of their schools.
Matinga, we've seen the issue of school funding and the adequacy of our basic education just come up time and again in the courts, and there have been a number of different lawsuits that have tackled this in different ways. If you were in the position of the state right now and trying to address the issues that were raised in the lawsuit and that the judges wrote about in the appeal, in the appeal decision, what do you think? How do you think the state could tackle this?
Well, you know, the state has some powers to tackle the system, but I feel like the control at the end comes from the other end. And I'm not indicting here the Detroit teachers and the Detroit school systems, because they can only work when the state gives them their support. And the state has been very much in the way because they provided these financial emergency managers, et cetera, et cetera. However, there are some creative and more innovative things that can happen in every school, decisions that can be more innovative while the state finds their conscience. Because to be able to move the state is a lot harder than to be able to move a local community and a local community school. I would like the states to just become hands-off. Their allocation of resources should not come with so much restriction, because that restricts the locals from doing their job, because the locals are the ones that can do the job.
You know, I have to ask, you know, what innovation looks like when so many districts are just kind of struggling to connect with their students amid the COVID-19 outbreak right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, is the fallout from this decision just gonna fall away as everyone tries to get kids on some kind of schedule?
Yeah, well, let me speak to the innovation part. You know, we've seen that with technology, there's a lot of flexibility and a lot of things that can happen. And again, if we stop imitating the schools in the suburbs and the schools with parental support and with community support and resources, I think the schools that need this kind of help can be a lot more flexible if the states allows for that flexibility. Because right now, if you have overcrowding, why do you have to overcrowd? Why do you have to give 100 children no education when you can give them a smaller part of the education in a much more flexible way?
Huh.
You see that the kids are learning online right now. Why do the kids have to be crowded into a school when we've had resources, or at least the ability to give them a really good education without them being crowded in one building? The building does not provide the education, the content and the teachers do. So there's a lot of rethinking that we can do that has to do with the number of kids in the school and how are you going to use the technology. And we have to give the kids technology, because a lot of these inner city schools are just now getting their laptops when everybody else has had them for at least 4 years.
That's an interesting take on how reopening schools may not be reopening them in the way that we understand them to operate.
For sure. I know that a lot of teachers are going to feel like, you know, this is so abnormal. When I go back into my building, I want normalcy. There's going to be that temptation to go back to normal. But if I was in the Detroit school system trying to figure out what is it that we're going to do now, this would be the time where the decisions of the new designs would come in. And those kids would not be back in the same exact schedule, in the same exact days. Do you go to school every day? Do you go to school 3 times a week? Do you go to school one day a week and then get supported in different ways?
Are there other things that you think about when you consider the reopening that's going to happen in some form or another, and what how that might change things in the classroom?
Oh, for sure. I specifically am worried about the kids' mental health. This is an epidemic that has hit Detroit kids, not only as the major global epidemic, but they had other epidemics on top of epidemics. And so some of these kids are coming in, they've lost family members because that's the epicenter. The kids are not okay because their parents are low income and they're working as essential workers right now and getting sick. I mean, this is, I would spend the first month just making sure my students are okay, building a community again, building them up before I'd start trying to bring any, you know, forceful academic content.
Yeah. Do you worry about the kids who are living through COVID-19 right now becoming a sort of lost generation?
I do. I do, because this is a traumatic event. It's a traumatic event for the world, let alone our youngest students. And so I worry that if this particular piece is not addressed when they come back to school, that we'll have a gap, not necessarily in content and not necessarily in standards or meeting the standards in school, but we'll have, again, a gap in the way these children are going to develop.
Matinga, you take care, and we're thinking about you and all the students that you work with and the teachers, too.
You know, and you take care as well.
Matinga Rigatz, a former Teacher of the Year in Michigan and an education consultant who talks to us about school issues on Stateside.